This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
You remember that 3-0 start, right? Panthers?
Yeah, I do. It seems a long time ago at this point.
Full dose of reality right down the gullet. 21-18 loss to the not good at all Philadelphia Eagles at Bank of America Stadium at Lincoln Financial Field.
In downtown Charlotte, right, or uptown Charlotte, rather.
This game had all of the greatest hits, though, from the last 2 years. We had wasted timeouts. We had curious fourth down decisions. We had special teams follies. Mm. We had poor quarterback play. We had horrible offensive line play. It was all there for you.
As Dave Chappelle once said, stewed to a perfection. About a different topic, but still.
It was brutal. Here's Sam Darnold after the game on his thoughts.
This week in particular, we didn't execute the way that we wanted to. I mean, there were some good things. Again, a loss is a loss, and you know it's always frustrating when you got a lead at halftime and things are kind of going well, and you know you just can't. At least offensively, we couldn't get anything going. Couldn't find a rhythm. It's always going to be frustrating.
All right, can I just say things were going well at halftime? Yeah, sorta. And I know that Matt Rhule said at halftime that. We still have control of the game. Nah, you didn't. Here's why. And we're going to get to Matt Rhule's comments in a second. Because you could argue that the Panthers lost their grip on this game, or at least left the door wide open for the Eagles to eventually walk through, based on the last 5.5 minutes of the first half. So let's run through this very quickly. Bad Philly punt. It looked like it might have been blocked, but I'm not sure the video supported that. But a bad Philly punt sets Carolina up at the plus 40. They pick up a first down on the first play and then ultimately have to kick a field goal. That's it. Couldn't you muster a 40-yard drive? Really? Kick a field goal. Then, I think you heard the highlight in the open. Bad snap over the head of Jalen Hurts. Goes into the end zone. Hurts did the greatest Cam Newton impression going after a fumble ever. Made no effort to fall on the ball. There were 75 Panthers in the end zone.
That was his first Cam Newton impression of the day.
Right. He did good Cam Newton, too. But, I mean, every Panther on the roster
right,
and last year's roster were in the end zone. None of them could fall on the football. It squirts out of the back of the end zone for a safety. So you got 5 points, right? Then you get the ball at the 35, right? At the at your own 35, after the free kick, it's a free possession. You drive to the Philly 46. There's 39 seconds left. It's 4th and 2, and you try to play cute, try to draw them offside. That doesn't work. And then you run the freaking punter on the field. Are you kidding me? At the plus 46 with control of the game, do you know how many total yards Philly's offense had mustered to that point in the game, Alec?
It was not a lot.
13! 13! You've given them 13 yards! Even if you took away the 16 yards, the minus 16 for the fumbled snap, add that, Philly had gained 29 yards of offense in the first half. And you're punting the ball away? Like, even if they gain 29 yards in 30 seconds from the 46-yard line, it's still, I mean, it's a makeable field goal, but they would have to total their entire half's output in 39 seconds. Come on, man, your defense is playing great. Trust your defense. Go for it. Keep the ball. Maybe score again. Nope. They punt it. Philly goes 44 yards in 34 seconds or something like that. They kick a 58-yard field goal. All your momentum is you just urinated all over it. It's gross. What a gross end of the half. That's where they lost this football game. And then there were Philly had two drives in the game, and Sam Darnold won good. Here's Matt Rhule on everyone needs to get better.
Just like everybody else, we've all got to be better. There's guys that are open. We got to make those throws. This is a game like you guys have heard me say 100 times. You know, like we're going to try to push the game to the fourth quarter and try to make one more play than the other team. I mean, they made one more play, right? I mean, they blocked the punt, then we stopped them. I think we have a chance to stop them. They score. You know, they get the 2-point conversion. At some point, we have to make one of those plays to win a game. And so that was my challenge at halftime. I told myself, hey, the guys, the plays are there to be made. You have a lead, but like anything from falling on the fumble in the end zone to making a tackle to catching a ball to throwing a ball, we've got to make a play.
Yeah.
Beep, 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 beep. That's all, folks. Gosh. I hated every bit of that answer. I hated every bit of that answer.
That's all, folks.
I mean, whatever.
Yeah. I have nothing to add. All of that's correct.
Yes,
I don't really
awful.
I mean, listen, there were other issues the Panthers had. Their offensive line was hot garbage yesterday.
It's bad. The interior none of it was good, but the interior of their line is terrible.
I mean, Darnold made some terrible throws, some bad decisions, but the offensive line was in his lap every freaking play. You had Taylor Moton playing the left side, which is not his natural side, in order to make room for Brady Christensen, who made his first start, playing at right tackle, which also isn't his natural side, but he's in the NFL, so you made two bad tackles out of one move. This is what we talked about at the beginning of the season with Taylor Moton, because the question was, well, maybe he's your best left tackle. If we don't know who's going to be the left tackle, then maybe it's Taylor Moton, who you just paid. But we kind of decided that why would you make that a worse position? You make two mistakes when you do that.
Let one position be solid.
Yeah, right.
And figure out the other position.
Figure
if
out
you
the
have
other one.
Leave a tight end to give your left tackle help. You do that. And it's not like the tight ends are a huge part of their passing offense right now. Although, shouts, Ian Thomas made a catch.
Ian Thomas did make a catch. Tommy Tremble made a catch.
Tommy Tremble scored a touchdown
right?
Yeah, caught a touchdown.
You know who didn't make a catch? Robbie Anderson.
Oh, he had a couple.
Didn't make a catch.
He had
when
a couple.
They needed a first down.
He dropped it.
And then there was a punt blocked. Yeah. And then there was a touchdown and a 2-point conversion on top of that.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson did drop that pass. Sam Darnold missed him on a post that would have been a touchdown with a better throw. Sam was not.
Neither
was
one
not
of those
Sam.
Offenses really wanted to win the game yesterday.
Oh, the Eagles are terrible.
The defenses.
Jalen Hurts is not good.
The defenses were pretty good. The overall numbers in the game are eerily similar. It was just a weird, ugly game.
It was a bad football game.
It was a bad football game, poorly coached and poorly played.
Yeah. Before we and Matt Rhule lost rock, paper, scissors to Nick Sirianni.
He lost a rock, paper, scissors guy.
It's amazing.
That's
so
the
bad.
Worst part of it.
I want to get to one thing before we bring in Will Brinson here. Because we need to at least mention the University of North Carolina here. Okay. All too often we fall victim to the what has happened before will happen again model when we come up with reasons why one team will win and one team will lose. So, and we talked about this in the roundtable. Well, is UNC at home? Right? Home UNC versus road UNC. Well, they'll win. They'll look great. They'll make people believe they have it figured out. But there apparently were competing models because I had not been aware of this. Mack Brown had never beaten Florida State, his alma mater, ever. Maybe if somebody had said it during the week, but I didn't pay that close attention to it. So there's competing models of futility here. Still, can I just say that there is no excuse at all for getting smacked in the face by a team as unimpressive as the Seminoles in your building. No excuse at all. Mack Brown, after the game.
My expectations to win every game. So we've three times we've met it and three times we haven't. The national media expectation, the expectations for us to be a top 10 team were wrong. So I guess we should all be critical of the media for picking us too high because we're not that good. So you guys all screwed it up.
All right, I got two things here. What's the difference, Alec, between we expect to win every game and you expected us to compete for a national championship. What's the difference?
There's no difference.
No difference.
Okay, so that's that. Secondly, let me just check the preseason coaches poll. Ninth. Is that the media? Look, that's shameful. That is a shame. And I, personally, I think Mac was sort of...
I think he was kidding a little bit.
He was kidding around. So I'm not going to slam Mac Brown. I will say this about Mac Brown before I continue this stupidity. I think Mac has had a greater sense of what the reality is than anybody around him. Remember the comment of, we're just renting. You know, we haven't bought yet in the top 10. We're just renting. So he has understood. So I am not, I do believe he was joking about that. And I said this 2 weeks ago, shame on the media for pointing the finger at the media, because it ain't the media's fault that North Carolina's 3-3. There are methods in how we predict who will win and who won't win. And when you return both sides of your line of scrimmage intact, that, not to mention you have a Heisman Trophy quarterback and almost everybody else on your defense, we just all naturally expect, well, they're going to get better.
So are you telling me that it comes down to what happens on the field?
Yes. Yes.
That,
and actually what happens
in a way, crowd noise and heart and speeches and confidence and all of these things,
well, maybe
don't play a factor.
It's very possible that Mac Brown didn't give a rah-rah speech before the game. Maybe that's why they lost. Here's the thing. To me, this is a player development problem at North Carolina. Their offensive line is worse than it was a year ago. Their defense as a whole, including their defensive line, clearly didn't get any better. It ain't anybody's fault but the people over in Chapel Hill. And we don't have to slam them for that, which is like, just stop blaming people other than yourselves. Accountability. That's what we want. All right, let's go to Will Brinson, my man, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick Six podcast moderator. Did we see a changing of the guard in Kansas City on two fronts? Not one front. On two fronts. Not only the teams in play, but the quarterbacks.
Oh, stop it. We're not. I'm not. I
okay.
refuse to do
I'm
that.
Just asking.
I've heard. I've heard that and seen that. And
okay.
I'm not willing to do that.
Okay. I'm glad you're not. I'll explain why I asked that second part of the question in a minute, but let's talk about the game.
Okay. So on the game front, I do think that there is, and I don't know if you've seen it or not. I tweeted out like at 2:30 in the morning last night after we finished doing the
way asleep.
I mean, there's a 45-minute lightning delay on a Sunday when there's a 9:30 a.m. London game. I mean, like, I don't want to complain about it because, you know, I'm talking about football for a living. But
right.
Geez Louise, man. I mean, I got to – come on. Come on, Mother Nature. Cut us a break. Josh Allen steps up to his post-game press conference, and his state, you know, you always give a statement and then you answer the questions. And he goes, look, I want to get it out there. He's like, I understand this is y'all's job, and you're going to make it a bigger deal than it is. That was just one game. We don't think after 5 weeks we're going to the playoffs or we're done doing what we need to do. And I was kind of astounded by it because, I get what he said, but I think he's lying, sort of. I mean,
right.
It was the same thing for the Ravens earlier in the year. You know, the Chiefs run the AFC. It goes through Kansas City if you want to go to the Super Bowl. If you want to achieve the ultimate goal of any NFL team, of any NFL quarterback, you've got to go through KC.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bills and the Ravens haven't been able to do it, and they did it this year. And I think that win over the Chiefs in that fashion, coming in with a better game plan than the Chiefs, playing – the Bills, by the way, have the best defense in football statistically right now. Josh Allen, you know, they came in, they ran Josh Allen early. Manny Sanders has been a revelation as a as a free agent pickup, you know, really under the radar addition. Dawson Knox is kind of having a breakout year after people thought he was just sort of a blocking tight end and a red zone guy. And Allen, after a shaky week one that feels like a billion years ago now, looks like he is very much ready to continue his leap forward from last year and maybe even win an MVP. And so, yeah, I don't think there's a changing of the guard, but I think there was a message sent that the Bills are ready to, like, sort of like, it's kind of like, I think I've said this like 10 times this year, but it's like the bad boy Pistons and Jordan. You
okay.
know, you gotta win it. You gotta beat them once to prove to yourself that you could do it. And I think the Bills did just that last night.
Well, Brinson is with us as he is on every Monday. All right, here's the way I look.
By the way, just I don't think we talk about this enough. Andy Reid fired Sean McDermott. replaced him with an offensive line coach back in like 2011.
Sure, well, and who knows? I mean, I haven't heard from Sean McDermott to think that had something to do with it, but human nature tells us it certainly does, right?
I think they're still buddies. Sean McDermott replaced Jim Johnson in Philly, and after Jim Johnson died of cancer,
right.
And it was like whoever replaced him was going to struggle to live up to
right.
the expectations. But then you don't fire your defensive coordinator and replace him with Juan Castillo. Like,
who was an offensive line guy. All right, let me just expand on the Bills and the Chiefs for a couple of things, because based on what Chris Collinsworth had to say last night, it's like a strategy that teams are forcing the Chiefs to basically play more conservatively or a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage offensively, not giving up the big plays, although Cleveland did that in week one.
You know,
not letting Tyreek Hill, whose drop led to the Micah Hyde interception return that I think ended the game. So forcing them to play short, utilize their running game, much like teams did to the Packers at the beginning of the season, figuring that they wouldn't be able to exercise the patience. Are the Chiefs built to do that? They should be, right?
I don't think that's it's like, oh, we solved the Chiefs.
Right.
We just won't let them hit explosive touchdown plays on us. Moo ha ha ha. I mean, like, I don't think that's the magic trick to it. It is, you know, certainly, look, this is what NFL teams have tried to do for years with, you know, varying success against various high-powered offenses. And it's why Tom Brady and the Patriots, you know, were so confounding for all these defensive coordinators, because they're like, we're not going to let you beat us over top. They're like, all right, cool. We're just going to eat you up underneath and not make mistakes. And I think, you know, part of Patrick Mahomes' game and part of what Andy Reid likes to work into the playbook is, you know, they want to be quick hitting and explosive and over the top. And so, you know, it's difficult for young quarterbacks, you know, with the skill level like Patrick Mahomes to be patient and to just, you know, to take what a defense is giving you time after time after time. Especially when, you know, on the other side, you have a guy like Josh Allen who is hitting explosive.
Right.
To me, the problem, there ain't no problem with the Chiefs offense. It is 100% on the Chiefs
right.
defense, which looks like, you know, I think right now you can draw a pretty clear or a pretty easy parallel between the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs and Peyton Manning Colts, where occasionally that defense sort of came together and you had a complete football team that was capable of winning it all. You always knew, like, Peyton Manning could have won the Super Bowl any given year.
Right.
Because of how good he was and how much skill level he had on that offensive side of the football. But you're overcoming the odds by winning it with a bad defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of where I think the Chiefs are at right now. Now, could that defense come together midway through the season? They start to get hot? Sure. Are they going to, you know, Stephen A. Smith, who, you know, whatever.
Right, exactly.
You're right. I mean, like, I'm not trying to give him any pub, but he tweeted out this clip. He's like, and the tweet was like, the Chiefs are done. It's over. They're finished. And then, like, the beginning of the clip was like, obviously they're going to the playoffs. It's like, what are you
right.
doing?
They're done, but they're going to the playoffs. All right. Let me just, before we take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about the Chargers and the Browns. The reason I asked you about Mahomes versus Allen was because I heard silliness on my radio this morning about how if they redrafted all of the young quarterbacks today, as if though they were all in the same draft, that you would take Allen and Herbert before you would take Mahomes.
Stop it.
Right.
Who said, name names. Who said this?
It might have been somebody named Ryan with the first name Rex. And there were other people. I think Keyshawn was involved in this as well. But look, there was just a lot of craziness.
That's asinine.
Yeah, I agree. Chiefs Bills was worth our discussion. There's actually a lot more we could have talked about. But let's talk about the Browns and the Chargers. I don't even want to slam the Browns because I think the Browns are legitimately good. I'm worried that Baker Mayfield will not be able to last the season because if you have a partially torn labrum, even if it's in your non-throwing shoulder, that is a painful injury that will impact your performance. But they put up 42 points. Charger, is their offense stoppable at this point?
No. I don't think so, man. I mean, you know, they have although Keenan Allen certainly looks stoppable, I guess. I'm bitter because I played him in DFS instead of Mike Williams, and it was quite expensive. But you know, it's interesting. Brandon Staley has done this thing where he's decided to, I guess Joe Lombardi's technically done it, but they have made Mike Williams more of a, you know, lower A dot, not a possession guy, but a complete receiver instead of just being the Robbie Anderson, like we mentioned earlier in the segment, where he just runs nine routes and you chunk it deep to him. And I think it's really diversified what they do on offense because, you know, before you had on one side, you know, depending on how you lined up, you had Mike Williams running deep and then Keenan Allen trying to beat man press coverage and get open. And, you know, it limited the looks that Justin Herbert would have across the full field. And now between those two guys and Austin Eckler, who and on that Monday night game, they're like, if you know, he's not a household name per se. I mean, he should be, and anyone who suggests that he's not is kind of crazy. And
not paying attention to the league is what they're saying.
Exactly, and like Austin Eckler is a stud.
Yep.
He can run between the tackles. You know, he is an incredible asset in the passing game,
yep.
And this offense just Rashawn Slater, the rookie out of Northwestern, is playing like a pro bowler at tackle position. They have a lot cooking for them on offense. And, you know, I would say that with their weapons and with the talent they have on defense, that they're a more balanced team than the Chiefs, a better overall team than the Chiefs right now, just as the Bills are.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We go into the season and we think it's a foregone conclusion that it's Buccaneers versus Chiefs again. And then, you know, we play a couple of games and we go, oh, yep, we were right, we were right. But the season is always played out for me in three parts. It's not a quarter pole, half pole, three quarter pole thing. To me, it's thirds. And what is true, I think, about the first third of the season is that right now in the AFC, the two best teams are the Chargers and the Bills. I think the Bills are better, but I don't know.
Bills are better, but the Chargers are good.
I mean, but I think there's a lot of teams that could actually be good and good enough to beat either of those two teams. Like, we thought Denver was good for a while, but this loss in Pittsburgh was so predictable to me. For a lot of reasons. One, I mean, Pittsburgh's not the worst team in the league.
One reason why it was so predictable was Ben Roethlisberger leaked out to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that he was being hamstrung by Matt Canada and Mike Tomlin. That's how you knew the Steelers were going to win, because when Big Ben starts leaking out to the local media that it's not his fault, he's due for a big game, and he'll probably have a disastrous one this week.
I don't care what he did this week. It wasn't amazing. He's not that good. It's over.
No, he's washed.
He completely washed. As I said the other day, it's the buzzer signifying the second spin cycle has already gone off. We are pretty much at the end.
No, I mean, like, hey, Ben, look around the bar, buddy. Eli and Phil left. It's over. JP Losman, long gone. Look around. You need to go home.
JP Losman, that's fantastic. All right. So are you worried at all about, I mean, the Browns,
I thought had a good defense. Are you worried at all about that? And one more thing about the Browns. Do we have an OBJ issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird. If you look at Baker Mayfield's efficiency over the course of his career with Cleveland, when OBJ is on the field, it's just craters. It's so he's the offense is, and I think that, I mean, my best guess to this, because it's, I have a hard time figuring out what the other possible explanation would be, but my best guess is that when OBJ is on the field, and when Jarvis Landry's not, Jarvis Landry, you know, not like a, you know, elite alpha receiver, but a very important piece, because you know, you can use him in the pass, you know, you can use him in the run game. He can throw the ball. You know, he can move all over the formation. He's a possession receiver, et cetera. But I think when OBJ is out there, because of his status, you know, his name, you know, he's Odell Beckham. And because, you know, because he is, in theory, a number one receiver, I think that Baker may lock in on him more when he's on the field. And when he's not on the field, Baker seems just anecdotally less inclined to – you know, funnel the targets in one direction and maybe to spread things out a little bit more.
I don't know, man. You would think that a player of his ability would make your whole team better, but it hasn't worked out that way. And I'm not necessarily blaming him because I don't know, you know, what the reasons are, but it hasn't been great. But then again, they scored 42 points. 42 points should be enough to win an NFL football.
Yeah. You think.
Right, especially with their defense. I think they have a good defense.
I think both the Chargers and Browns have good defenses, and that was sort of more one of those NFL, you know, NFL games between two top tier teams where the game script sort of makes things go crazy, and it's, you know, like Ravens and Browns last year on that Monday night where, you know, that's not even really the identity of those two teams, but like the way that things sort of played out, it just got weird.
Yeah, and honestly, in football, if you have a great quarterback and he plays well, I don't think there's anything the other team can do unless you can dominate the other offensive line and get to the quarterback. Let me ask you one more thing before we have to go, and we've got about 30 seconds. The Seattle Seahawks without Russell Wilson for however many weeks it's going to take. Yep.
Yeah. Look, Geno Smith was awesome in backup duty for the Seahawks on Thursday night. It's a different beast when you have to prepare for a full week and go into it and versus, you know, just sort of coming out cold and just jumping in the game and just sort of, you know, letting adrenaline take over. So I would, given how good the Rams look, the Cardinals and the 49ers are in trouble too, but the Seahawks are in big trouble.
Yeah, they are in big trouble. I was hoping that Ryan Fitzpatrick would be back so we could see three former Jets starting quarterbacks all starting in the same week.
Don't forget that every time Geno Smith throws an interception, it helps the Jets draft pick.
Oh, does it?
Because of Jamal Adams, yeah.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. All right, sir. I appreciate your time. We got to go. We'll see you next week.
All right, man. See ya.
My man, Wes Bryant, ACC Digital Network, Westcott Range on Twitter. Did your mom predict a North Carolina loss at home to Florida State?
No, she did not predict a loss at home to Florida State. But I did think that was going to be a very competitive ball game, and I thought Florida State had a great chance to win that game. I know I've been very hard on Florida State this year, but I thought with them coming off of a victory and the way that they were playing, and I just thought with Carolina, what we saw from them against Georgia Tech, I just knew that Florida State was going to come in there feeling kind of good about themselves, was going to play with some confidence and give Carolina a lot of problems. And that's exactly what they did and came in with the victory.
Well, before we get to Florida State, because it is possible, and we know they're not, in terms of personnel, what they used to be. It's possible, obviously, that your best players play well. But I need to ask, from your perspective, when you watch the Tar Heels, what is the problem? I mean, are they just not good on either line, and that just kind of opens up the door for anything to happen? What do you see from the Tar Heels?
Well, the problem with North Carolina is I think they're a finesse team with small receivers on offense and on defense. I have been saying all summer that this was a defense that wasn't very good last year to begin with. And for people to think that they were all of a sudden going to snap their fingers and become this dominant unit, I knew that that wasn't going to happen either. You know, you're missing a little bit of size. De'Ami Brown wasn't the biggest receiver, But De'Ami Brown was a big play wide receiver. Daz Newsome was dynamic from the slot. Then you had guys like Bo Corrales and some of those guys that fill in the blanks. But now, you know, you come in with this new crew, and Joshua Downs has been phenomenal, but they haven't gotten plays from the other guys. And they're a small group of receivers that's had a little bit of trouble when teams get physical with them, like they did in the Virginia Tech game to start the season. They've ran the ball decent at times, but as I said, they're just a finesse team with small receivers. And it's very hard to dominate teams offensively when that is the case. And as I said, defensively, you weren't very good to begin with, and you didn't really improve there. So, yeah, and as you said, on both sides of the ball, they struggled there as well. They don't generate much pass rush out of that front four. Mm-hmm. And then on offensive line, they've been porous. And Sam Howell has had a tough time, you know, getting the ball out and doing some of the things that he's capable of doing.
So they're also putting a lot on Sam Howell. What kind of danger is he in? For like, I think it was the second straight game he had over 100 yards rushing. Like, he was almost a focal point for them in the run game again. Are they wrecking him? What are they doing?
I don't know that I would necessarily say that they're wrecking him, because this was his MO coming out of high school. He was a 1,000-yard rusher. Kind of certain his last couple of years at Sun Valley, he was over 1,000 yards rushing, and then he threw for a ton of yards as well. So that's his MO. This isn't anything that's foreign to him. But I think also Sam Howell has to take a little bit of the blame as well. We came into this season touting him as a guy that was going to be no less than the second or third pick in the NFL draft, and he hasn't necessarily shown that this season either. So I think it's just been a mix of everything, because the thing is, when you go to the NFL, it's a top three pick. You're not going to have a great offensive line. You may not have a great receiving core. So how are you going to deal with that? How are you going to play through that, getting hit in the mouth on a consistent basis, and you need to win games? And so this Carolina season, I think he has to take a little bit of the blame as well. So, no, I don't think they're wrecking him. He's their best playmaker on offense. And so he's doing what he can to manufacture offense for them.
Look, there are times Sam Howell looks like the old Sam Howell, but he has been exposed a lot in almost any way you want to interpret that word. Wes Bryant from the ACC Digital Network is with us. All right, Wake is 6-0. I'm not that surprised. I thought Wake was going to be great offensively. I think they're better defensively than I thought, but Syracuse did hang 37 on them. That was a weird game. Is that one of those games that, you know, maybe I'm not saying Wake overlooks Syracuse, but what's your take on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say overlook, but this is just a game that, hey, that's through the course of a season, you're going to have games like that. When you go up to play an opponent, Syracuse was upset at the way they had lost the previous week to Florida State.
Right.
We know that they have playmakers with Sean Tucker, and we know Garrett Schrader, while in the pocket, maybe not the greatest quarterback, but we know when he makes plays with his legs, he's very dangerous. And so when you put him with a running back like Tucker, that makes them have a very formidable running game. You got him at home, coming off an embarrassing loss to Florida State in their eyes. So, yeah, they were going to come out and give you everything that they had, not to mention a ranked football team coming in their building. Syracuse is looking at that like, hey, you know, we didn't get it right last week, but we've got a golden opportunity. Let's go out and give it all we've got. And I think Wake Forest early may not have been ready for that type of onslaught from the Orange. But then once they got things in order, they started to settle into the football game. They started to make plays and get stops. And then it started to get, you know, just kind of back and forth. But Wake Forest just showed resiliency. They stuck with it, and they got it done.
They're a fun team to watch. 6-0. They have a week off. Then they get Army on the road, and home against Duke. I mean, yep. I'm not saying they should be or will be 8-0, but I think it's fair to expect that that's a very likely scenario, 8-0. What's your overall view of where they are and what their potential is in terms of maybe going, I don't know, 11-1, 12-0?
Well, let's just call it what it is. People may look at it as me being biased because that's my alma mater, but just in all seriousness, I felt after they started to string together some victories, And with the way that Clemson has looked this season, the way the Atlantic has looked and the ACC as a whole, I said Wake is now in a position where they can get to Charlotte. They've been the most consistent team thus far, in my opinion, this season. When you talk about offensively, defensively, yeah, they did give up some points to Syracuse, but this is a team that gets after the quarterback on a consistent basis. They make plays. They can get turnovers. They don't turn the football over very much. And they're explosive on offense. So, yeah, I think this is a team that should be going to Charlotte. I think they will be going to Charlotte just because, as I said, the experience, the consistency with which they play. I just think this is a football team that's going to be hard for anybody to beat right now. The key for them, as you said, is not to use cliches, but just taking it one game at a time. You got to take care of Army. You have to take care of Duke. And I think the key for them to lock them in to come into the Queen City to play for the championship as if they can beat NC State. I think that's the game in the Atlantic that's going to determine the Atlantic Division champion because, frankly, I don't see Clemson. I think Clemson has another loss or two coming their way this season in the league. And so I think that NC State Wake is the game that you look at to say the Atlantic representation in the ACC championship is going to come from this football game.
Yeah, it's really interesting. To me, there are three real contenders in the Atlantic. Wake, obviously, State, who already has the win over Clemson, and that game was closer than it probably should have been based on the way that game played out. State, to me, was significantly better than Clemson on that day. And the Clemson Tigers aren't out of this yet. I think you're probably right that there's another loss, maybe two, in Clemson, but I would also say that maybe not. And it's possible that they finish 7-1, Wake finishes 7-1, and State finishes 7-1 atop the league. Can you see that plan out?
No, I don't see it playing out that way because I think that Wake is going to beat Clemson this year. I think that's going to happen. I'm pretty deep in my convictions on that.
All right.
And I also think Clemson's going to take a loss to the Pittsburgh Panthers. Pitt, when you look at them offensively right now, they are a juggernaut, to say the least. In the one game that they did lose, they lost, you know, scoring over 40 points. And I just think when you look at the Clemson Tigers right now, this defense has been – it's been a war of attrition. They've lost some key pieces there. Then when they do get in games, they're on the field a whole lot, so they're eventually going to give up some plays. And when you're talking about offenses as consistent as Wake's and as Pittsburgh's, who has an identity, they know what they are – they know when they come into a game against a team like Clemson, they know exactly what they want to attack and how they're going to do it. And when you look at Clemson's offense right now, they're just – this is not something that's going to be an overnight fix where they come out of the bye week and they're scoring 40 and 50 points a game. This is an offensive team that's going to continue to struggle. It's not going to change. And so when you're going up against teams that are as good offensively as a Wake, as a Pitt, I just don't see them being able to generate the offense. The defense is going to get fatigued. The defense is not going to be able to just shut these teams out. They're going to give up points. And I just don't think Clemson has the answers to the test to be able to overcome a team getting up on them by one, two scores. Dare I even say three scores? Because as I said, yes, Wake can beat them, and they're not as potent as Pittsburgh. But when you're playing against the Pittsburgh Panthers right now, they're going to score points. It's going to be hard to stop them. And the thing is Clemson have the answers to the test to be able to hang with them scoring-wise, and I say no.
Kenny Pickett, by the way, having a monster.
He's the player of the year.
Holy cow, he's having a monster season. I still can't believe that they lost to Western Michigan at home. Final thing for Wes Bryant, ACC Digital Network. And at some point, we need to get you and your mom on to do football picks at the end of the week, because I think it would be an absolute scream of a segment. But I'm going to ask you to pick one game for me. State, after a bye week, is playing at Boston College. This has never been an easy game for this program, and it really started with Tom O'Brien going up to his old haunts, but it hasn't been easy for Dave Doran either. Boston College is good. I mean, they should have beaten Clemson a couple of weeks ago. Absolutely should have beaten Clemson. What do you think about the Wolfpack against the Eagles up in B.C.?
That's going to be a bit of a tricky game. I think NC State coming off that Clemson win, I think they might have had a little bit of a hangover, struggled just a little bit and got out of that game by the skin of their teeth. I think they'll be ready to go. against Boston College. Grossell, in my opinion, just hasn't shown enough for me to really think that Boston College can beat a team like State. I just think that he's just, for whatever reason, I mean, we saw in the Clemson game just some of the silly turnovers and some of the things that he did, you know, sputtering, having that offense sputtering, not being able to get the ball to Zay Flowers and those playmakers. And they have a good running attack, but not a prolific running attack that we've seen from them in the past with guys like A.J. Dillon. So I think NC State, if they are who we think, they should be able to go up there and handle business. I'm going to take the Wolfpack.
Wes Bryant, appreciate your time. At Wes Got Range on Twitter, ACC Digital Network. We will be in touch, sir. Thanks, as always.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you guys.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.